What is up, everyone? We're back for the Deep Drive Pod for episode number 78. Today's episode is going to be centered around first baseman. Kind of a weird position in the sense that, you know, first base defense is one of those things that kind of gets overlooked. But in the same vein, it's like,
it doesn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. But it's like, I guess it kind of like, you know, it's one of those things, you know. But it's a position ripe full of good offensive players, which is fun to see. Definitely not, you know, I don't really like positions that we don't have great hitters in because they're just boring as shit. And defense, quite frankly, is very fickle to deal with in the first place. So you can kind of just ditch your DRS, ditch your OAA, ditch your UZR. And let's just look at offense here. James, I think that we have a pretty talented position here in first base. I think it's gotten better over the last few years. There have been some young players that have emerged. There have been some guys who have maintained being a superstar even past their age 30 season. So kind of let's get started with this list.
Yeah, so I mean, just to hop right into it, coming in at number 10, we have Anthony Rizzo of the New York Yankees. And Rizzo's a guy who is now entering his age 34 season. Age 33 season, I believe. Coming off of a great year last year, right? 133 WRC plus. Not the best batting average, which is kind of uncharacteristic for him. He used to be a 300 hitter kind of year in, year out, at least close, you know, 280, 290. And this year, just 224. But he slugged higher than he has since 2019, which was the best, you know, second best year of his career, offensively at least. Maybe not. That's a stretch. He had a few. But anyways, you look at Rizzo, and he's a guy who plays well for that ballpark. He fits well. And, you know, he kind of does everything that you would want him to do. He gets on base. He hits home runs. He plays somewhat decent defense. It's kind of fallen off recently in the past few years. But that's kind of just, you know, he's aging. What do you really expect from him? He's the number 10 first baseman in baseball right now. What are your thoughts, Ryan?
Yeah, so, you know, he's kind of changed, as you mentioned, the batting average approach. He's kind of gone for more fly balls than the line drives and ground balls, which I think is kind of the play at this point. You know, we'll see how the shift affects him. I don't want to sit here and say, you know, Anthony Rizzo is going to go out and start hitting 250, 260 with a fly ball approach. But maybe see a couple points here and there in the OBP and batting average. I think that'll offset what was a career best year in isolated power. And I don't think he's going to sustain that next year, just, you know, based on the fact that you can't really expect a player to repeat having their best year in terms of just raw power numbers. But when you look at Anthony Rizzo, I think he's just kind of the definition of, he's just a solid first baseman. I don't think he's here because he's not that good. I think he's more so this is more so a product of a lot more talent at the position. You know, this position's loaded with guys who can put up really good offensive numbers and play a little bit better defense, or, you know, hit a lot better. So I view Rizzo as just a solid first baseman. So I think it's a good spot for him.
Yeah, and like you were saying, there's a lot of first basemen in the league who could be worthy of this list. A couple, just to name a few. I meant to do this before, honorable mentions. Rhys Hoskins is a guy who I think was pretty close for all of us to make this list. Christian Walker made my list, did not make our cumulative list. And then I had one more. Oh, Josh Bell. Josh Bell had an incredible year last year. And he made Jack's list, but did not make the top 10 for our cumulative list. Now coming in at number 9, we have new Houston Astros first baseman, Jose Abreu. And Abreu, like Rizzo, is another guy who's kind of aging, but his bat is still there. He had a 138 WRC plus last year. He was, I think, one of the best hitters in the entire league in the second half last year. Got off to a slow start. And you move a guy to Houston, and you expect them to hit well because everyone hits well in Houston.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, you know, you expect the power to get better. Last year, he landed 141 ISO, only hit 15 home runs. That's just not very Jose Abreu. You know what I mean? This is a guy who is kind of always been, you know, a big home run guy. You know, the lowest home run total of his career up to that point was 22 in 2018 when he hit, when he just played 128 games. Even in 2020, he had 19 in 60 games. So he's just kind of always been a big slug guy. I think going to Houston is going to help him in that regard. You know, I don't know if the batting average will sustain, but I mean, there's a world where he's able to, you know, hit, you know, maybe hit 304, you know, or hit, you know, even 280, and the power kind of comes back and you see one of those ridiculous WRC plus numbers, you know, maybe a 135, 140, you know, and the defense isn't bad. It isn't like good, but it isn't bad. So, you know, you're not really looking at someone who you're concerned about becoming kind of a brick there. I think Josh Bell, you know, when you mentioned Josh Bell's like honorary mention, Josh Bell could be so bad defensively at first base. You're like, you know, him and Abreu could put up similar WRC plus numbers, but Abreu will be the significantly more valuable player. I think him above Rizzo is kind of just like, he's not, you know, they're both not great defenders, but Abreu's kind of been the better hitter for a little bit of, for a good stretch now. So even in his advanced age, I feel pretty confident with putting him 9 on this list.
Yeah, and coming in at number 8, we have, oh, great. Why is this not loading? We have Ty France of the Seattle Mariners. And France is a guy who I was higher on than you guys, but he's one of the best younger first basemen in the league. I feel like this is a pretty old position, right? You see a lot of guys move to first base, and France has been there. He plays solid defense. He has a great bat. He does not walk, which is really like the real one concern with his game. He doesn't homer much either, but he gets a ton of base hits, right? He had a 126 WRC plus, 2.4 WAR last year. Not amazing, nothing special, but you know, he gets the job done, and he's one of the best first basemen in the league because of it.
Yeah, you know, last year was weird because he got off to like a really good start. He had 148 WRC plus entering the All-Star break, and then he kind of slumped after that. He had some injury issues. You know, quite frankly, I wouldn't be stunned if he beats that 126 WRC plus mark we saw last year. You know, I think him being younger allows me to sit back and say, you know, I think he'll, you know, going into next year, you don't have to expect any regression from him the way you kind of would be regressing a little bit with Rizzo and Abreu. So that's why I had him, you know, higher than those two on the list. I know that I was a little bit lower than him on as compared to you, James, but I think it's more so how I view other guys' position. And again, less so a knock on Ty France, more so an uplift for the other guys we'll mention on this list.
Yeah, coming in at number 7, we have a guy that I was much lower on than you two, which is Nathaniel Lau of the Texas Rangers. Entering now his age 27 season, after a couple years, actually really good years for Texas after Tampa Bay traded him, which normally you don't see. He had a 143 WRC plus last year, which at the position ranked, I believe, 4th in the league. Yeah, 4th in the league, tied for 3rd. And I think the reason I'm a little lower on Nathaniel Lau is I don't know if I'm fully bought in on the fact that he's actually this good of a hitter. But, you know, looking at what he's done, there's really not, you know, other than the ex-Woba being lower, which is a little concerning, especially given that ballpark, you'd expect it to be the other way around where they kind of underperform their numbers. He overperformed them. I think he's due for a little bit of regression. And I believe Steamer agrees with me. 132 versus 143 last year, which isn't a huge difference, but I think it's big enough. I ranked him below guys like Ty France, Jose Abreu. So, you know, I think 7's a pretty reasonable spot for him. He's kind of come into his own as a hitter recently, so I don't hate it.
Yeah, you know, for Lowitz, I definitely agree that he's not going to repeat a 143. I think the BAPIP also screams out a little bit here. He's a career 349 BAPIP guy, so you kind of feel like he's going to have a way higher BAPIP than average, but 363 doesn't seem like that's a sustainable number. That is the highest.
And maybe he's one of those left-handed hitter guys who will kind of benefit from the shift a little bit, right? I think it's a lot of ground balls and line drives. He doesn't hit a ton of fly balls. He had 27 homers last year. But yeah, like he had a 48% ground ball percentage last year and 55 the year before that. So he does hit a lot of ground balls per fly ball at almost 2 over the past couple of years.
Yeah, and ultimately, like, again, even without shift, like, I just don't think 363 is necessarily sustainable, but I do buy into him being a really good hitter. I think, you know, compared to France, Abreu, Rizzo, I think we'll have the highest WRC plus of the four. The big concern here is the defense is clearly the worst of the four. It's really bad at first base, but I'm inclined to feel as if the bat is going to outweigh the defense, but I think we're still at that part of the list where any ordering of this four won't really, like, drastically have me feeling one way or the other. If you like, you have low, I believe you said below Abreu in France, can totally see that for next year, right? Like, I wouldn't be stunned if those two guys are better than low, but I feel confident that low's bat is going to be good enough to carry him above the rest.
Yeah, Coming in at number six, we have Matt Olson of the Atlanta Braves. And admittedly, I think this is like really like badly low. I think Jack ranking him at seven dragged this down to six. I had him at four. No, I had him at five, and you had him at six. So, you know, not a huge difference, but yeah, I definitely think Olson is a little over is a little underrated here. This is a guy who a couple of years ago we were talking about as the best first baseman in baseball, right? You know, not obviously not the best year from him last year, overall. You know, he didn't play as much. I think didn't he get hurt last year, if I remember correctly?
Well, you played 162 games. I think he might have been, maybe he was dealing with something during the year, but
am I looking? I just completely missed him. So I thought he was unqualified because I'm looking at the qualified hitters. He wasn't there. I take that back. He did not get hurt last year. He just wasn't. I just didn't see him. 120 WRC plus last year, huge down year, right? Especially given 147 the year before and 135 the year before that. But the one thing we do say about Olson that we can't say about other guys is that he's legitimately an elite defender at first base, which you normally don't find. And I think that really boosts him. He hits a shitload of homers, 34, 39 the last 2 years. I think this is a really low ranking for him. I would like to see him in the top five. I think you could put him at number four, and I don't understand how you could rank him under Nate Lowe, but you know, here
yeah,
we
go. I can't put him over low, under low. Quite frankly, you know, I don't think the gap between WRC plus next year for low and Olson is drastic enough to outweigh, you know, any, like the defense right there is such a massive swing. We're talking, you know, I know we mentioned defense doesn't really matter for the position. We're talking,
but we're
like
talking about a 20 run swing here. That's two
right.
wins.
Like
this
that's,
is a
that
huge
matters too
difference.
Much. Yeah, and then for the offense, I mean, Olson ran a 116.8 max exit velocity. I want people to understand, you know, that's what we're pushing, you know, that crazy level of power. It's like unique. You know what I mean?
I think you rely on this max exit velocity too much, because you could just like, it's one batted ball, right? Like
right.
All you
I
need
think
is 90th, one.
90th percentile is definitely a better metric.
It's definitely a better metric for sure, but to look at their 90th percentile exit velocity. I fully agree with you.
I'm pretty sure his 90th percentile ranks pretty well as well. And, you know, in terms of hard rate, hit rate, barrel rate, like it all kind of lines up. I don't think it's a situation where he just had one hard, really hard hit ball and everything else kind of just fell apart. I think Olson hits the ball hard, and he does so with, you know, typically he has a fly ball heavy approach. So being able to consistently elevate the ball in the air with high exit velocities is important. The strikeout rate was high last year for his stand compared to 2021, which is interesting. I don't think we'll see that again. I think we're going to see a return to, you know, right around league average strikeout rates. The walk rates kind of was low compared to his career norms last year. I think that'll climb up a little bit. No big distinction in BABIP though. Maybe that could change next year with you know, different shift rules, but his batting average and OBP plummeted. I don't know. It was a weird year for Matt Olson. I think we could totally see him climb up this list. Maybe I'm overreacting in the sense of putting him at six, but I also don't think it's as much about him not performing well as much as it is. I think other guys ahead of him have taken either steps forward or have just consistently always been better than him. So that's kind of my reasoning for having him where I did on the list.
Yeah. I think maybe I was overreacting a little bit too to him being this like low. I don't think it's that low. It's like, it's one spot lower than I had him. I just think that the guy we have above him, Vinny Pasquantino at number five, is just, I think that's ridiculous, to be honest with you. To call at this point in their careers him a better player than Matt Olson, who we know is an established guy. And I'm not one to be like, oh, the established guy. Like, we've gotten so many comments on our Twitter post about how Adley Rutschman is too high because JT Realmuto is more established. There's a difference between that type of established, where we've kind of like, Adley Rutschman is an established, very, very good catcher, like best catcher in baseball, to be honest with you. Vinny Pasquantino, not so much. You know, he has great batted ball data, right? That's like kind of his, that's kind of his MO, right? That's what he's known for. He absolutely hits the piss out of the ball, right? But we're looking also at the same time at a guy who had a 137 WRC plus last year. He's projected 140. I just don't know if I fully expect that out of him, especially given, you know, he was never like a top prospect, right? He wasn't a guy that, like, it's different when we're looking at a guy like Adley, who's kind of been the number one prospect in baseball since the day he was drafted, and then Pasquantino, who's a guy that, you know, you're not exactly so sure what you're going to get from him. Also, he's already 25. So I think that's another big thing is like, yeah, he's a rookie, but he's also a 25-year-old rookie. So, I mean, I don't know.
I don't think he's going to get much better. Like, I don't think this is a guy where, like, okay, he had a 137 his first 72 games, so it's going to get even higher. Like, I don't – that's not how I view it. Like, Adley, I legitimately think we could be viewing – I think we're going to get, like, an 8-9 war year out of Adley at some point in his
career. Oh, yeah, at some point, I think we will be looking at Adley as, like, a consensus top five player in baseball.
Right, or, like, even J-Rod. Like, you look at J-Rod, you're like, he was,
like, oh, yeah, we look at – like, I think J-Rod has – I this is J-Rod this might be a stretch, but J-Rod could have an 11-win season just the way he plays defensive hits. Like I don't think that's really like he could have a year like Josh did last year. Maybe not so much offensively, but definitely
I think
better defensively and better on the bases. So
the comp I'm looking for is that Mookie Betts 2018 for J-Rod, but I'll save my
or that love. I think more the 2012 Trout, but
that's a good I love that comp as well. Both of those years were really good,
but the yeah, we'll get to center field later.
The thing with Pasquantino, I can't do this.
Man. I think it's Pasquantino. I don't know. I'm not Italian.
But one of the big things is he can walk more than he strikes out. I think like he just didn't whiff. Like typically you see a guy come up and they struggle with that. He does not swing and miss, man. This and he's a guy who lifts. He's not like a guy who doesn't lift the ball in the air either. He puts the ball in the air. You know, I'm concerned about how the ballpark is going to play with his home run totals. But you know, even at first base, small sample size, of course, 306 innings isn't crazy. You know, -2 DRS, 2.3 UZR, 1 OAA. I don't think defense is going to be like a massive issue the way we see it with like Nate Lowe, where like Lowe can legitimately like have like a 130 WRC plus. And a well below 3 WAR year and kind of tank the rest of his value because he's a really bad defensive player. He's a brick back there. And kind of like how Christian Walker can be like last year, he wasn't like a crazy, crazy hitter, but he was one of the best first basemen in baseball because he's just that good of a defender. But Pasquantino, dude, he's going to be, his defense is not going to play a factor into this. His offense is so good. I mean, the projections obviously stand out, but if you look at the minor leagues, you mentioned he's never really been a top prospect. It's kind of hard for first baseman to rank in that, you know, past, you know, into the top 10 or 20. I mean, inherently thinking about it from the sense of, you know, if you're giving these future value grades, can you really give a first baseman that like 6 WAR future value grade? Like, can you really do that to the first baseman getting?
I think it depends. Like, if you're looking at a guy like when we were looking at Vladimir Guerrero Jr. coming up, obviously he came up as a third baseman, but as a first baseman, I would have given him that grade 100%. But
I don't know if he would have gotten that grade as a first baseman.
I think it was kind of. Looking at Guerrero as a prospect, it was kind of inevitable that he moved to first base. He moved to first base his fucking rookie season. Like, he played third base for, what, 2 weeks? Like,
no, I mean, the way I view it is, like, Vlad, and we'll get to Vlad later, Vlad is, like, gonna be a Hall of Famer. Like, we are 3 years, 4 years, he's gonna be a Hall. Like, he just doesn't.
Right.
Like, I don't
obviously
think
obviously Pasquantino is not that guy.
I'm not talking about Vinny P the way I'm talking about Vlad in the sense of, like, this guy's gonna be a sustained, like, for the next 10 years.
I just disagree with what you said, where you were like, I don't know if I could rank a first baseman that high as a prospect. I disagree with that.
I'm just saying, I don't know if I'm not saying I don't know if I could. I'm saying I don't think prospect sites like putting first baseman that high in general. Like, he was ranked as a 79th best prospect in baseball. Coming into 2022, he had a 152 WRC plus in Double A and walked more than he struck out at the age of 23. Like, this isn't like an old guy going to Double A and just killing it. Like, he was clearly going to be, and even in Triple A, like, he, you know, 139 WRC plus, walked more than he struck out. I mean, like, the guy just mashes, right? Like, he just doesn't, all he's done is hit. And it's, you know, Torkelson, I guess you can say is the exception. I guess that's like the exception of like guy who comes up and was like given a lofty comparisons, good FV, really good FV, and you know, that situation there. But is Vinny P, like, what does Vinny P do poorly offensively? Is there anything he doesn't do well offensively? There isn't. Like, there's nothing, like, Olson, not that Olson can't be a better hitter than him, but I don't think we're looking at a guy that, like, he has
Olson strikes out all the time.
Like, has better play discipline, better hit tool, similar power tools. Like, I've got to give it to Vinny P offensively. Though I do think the defense with Olson can definitely allow him to super to kind of
well, climb especially over. Like, and I know what you're saying, it's not a big deal at first base, but Olson is so good.
No,
defensively
I get
at first
it.
Base.
It's like if you put them within 5 WRC plus points, Olson's clearly going to be the better player. But the way I view it is like, can like Vinny P? It's weird that a guy who is so a guy like Vinny P is projected to be, you know, a top 10 hitter in baseball. When I know projection, Steamer can overrate, you know, AAA players, but you don't see them overrate them to the point where they're throwing guys who have no business being, you know, 140 WRC plus hitters with the 140 WRC plus. You know, we're talking about very, very rarely do you see that. He's got this, like, it's just tough for me to feel any type of way that isn't, this guy is really damn good. But I understand your hesitancy to put him over Olson, where this isn't just like an established player versus a non-established player. This is a guy who's like, you know, Olson is a guy who used to be considered, you know, someone who could be the best first baseman in baseball. He's only a year removed from being arguably the best first baseman in baseball. And Pascal Concino, we kind of have to see, one, how does he hold up over a full season defensively? Two, what does Olson look like next year? And three, is he taking a step forward, or is he just kind of the same hitter he was last year?
Yep. Coming in at number four, we have Mets first baseman Pete Alonso. I think from here, we kind of have like a consensus. And I feel like it's going to be hard to disagree with at least the four guys, right? Like, you can argue about the order of the top three, where it's like, you know, maybe you think Goldschmidt's the best or Guerrero's the best. But I think Pete Alonso is the clear-cut number four first baseman in baseball. He's not as good as the top three, and he's better than everyone below him, right? You look at Alonso, this guy, he hits nukes. That's what he's on the field to hit nukes. And he does. He slugged .518 last year, ISO of .246, which was the third best at the position last year, behind only Goldschmidt and Rizzo. And obviously the reason why Rizzo's ISO is so high is because he doesn't hit for average. Alonso, on the other hand, does hit for average, with a .271 batting average last year. .354 xWOBA, .143 WRC plus, 4-win season. And, you know, Alonso, I think, is consistent, right? Where you're like, you know, he's a 140, 145 WRC plus hitter, and that's who he is. That's who he'll be. He's a 4-win player, and there's not really much to talk about there.
Yeah, he also cut down his strikeout rate over the last 2 years. Got it well under 20%. Well under 20%. Last year was the lowest strikeout rate of his career. Hit 40 home runs. I mean, like you said, he's on the field to just drop tanks, you know. And there is a certain beauty to just a guy who just goes out there and just fucking hits nukes. You know what I mean?
I think the Mets need one more Pete Alonso.
I think every team could use, not obviously every team could use a Pete Alonso, but like there's just
there's not a team in the league that you give Pete Alonso to, and they're like, no, I don't want him. Even a team with a superstar first baseman, you give the Dodgers Alonso, they want him. You give the Cardinals Alonso, they want him.
Shit like that. They'll move. Yeah. They'll do some, like, the way I look at it, like,
Alonso has such a good bat that there's no way not to put him in the lineup. I put him at second base. I don't care. He's such a good hitter.
I mentioned Vinny P not really having a flaw. Like, okay, Pete Alonso legitimately, like, he walks at a good rate. He doesn't strike out anymore. He hits the absolute piss out of the ball. He plays a ton of games. He's extremely consistent. Like, outside, obviously defense is going to limit his ceiling, and there are guys ahead of him that are, you know, just freak talents, right? Hall of Fame caliber players. But Pete Alonso is just like really damn good. So I think that's kind of my final thoughts on Alonso there.
Yep. I definitely agree with you there. Looking now at number three, we have coming in at number three, we have Vladimir Guerrero Jr. I know you had him at number one, which I don't disagree with at all. Like, I didn't put him at one, but I also don't think that Guerrero Jr. is, you know, like, I think the difference between 1, 2, and 3 here is marginal at best, right? We can't say like there's a huge difference. We're talking about a guy who won MVP, right, last year. We're talking about a guy who finished second 2 years ago, and then we're talking about another guy who won it 3 years ago. Like, these are MVP candidates kind of year in and year out at this point. Guerrero Jr. obviously got off to a pretty poor start last year. And then he was kind of on fire for the second half, right? I think I could get the splits up real quick if I want to. But we're talking about a guy who is 23 years old right now. He's entering his age 24 season. Did I mix that up? He had a better first half than second half is what I meant. But you look at Guerrero Jr., and this is a guy who is going to be a top 10 hitter for the next 10 years, right? He's that good, and he's going to continue to be that good. So I don't really think there's much of a flaw in his game either. You know, you'd like him to hit the ball in the air more. He's figured that out a little bit. He had 32 home runs last year. He's pretty much good for 30, 35 home runs a year at this point. I would be shocked if he had any less, unless he gets hurt, obviously. But he doesn't get hurt. That's the other thing. That's the thing about Guerrero. These top three, completely, all three of them, really, they don't miss games. And I know it's an easy position to do that, right, first base. But they do not miss games. Guerrero only, I think, missed one or two games last year and then one or two games a year before that. He's playing 160 games a year. And there's a lot of value to that that I think a lot of, you know, your typical advanced stats people may not give him credit for. I think, just generally speaking, I care more about volume than almost anyone. But I think you look at Guerrero Jr. and you kind of know what you're going to get. You're getting an elite bat with a bad glove, and you're okay with that. I think next year, so he's projected 161 by Steamer, which is a wildly high projection, but I think it's fully warranted. Like, you know, 161 is Trout level projection, right? But I don't see a reason why he couldn't be that good next year.
Yeah, you know, the way I look at it with Vlad is like, when we're talking about these next group of first baseman, Vlad is very clearly the one that can't contribute the other two facets of the game that these two ahead of him can. Like, Freeman and Goldschmidt are just better base runners and better defenders. So I can totally see that from the, you know, looking, stepping back and saying, you know, if these three guys put up the same WRC plus next year, who's going to be the better player? Like, Vlad's going to be player three in that group. The way I look at it is I think he's going to, I personally think he can live up to those projections. I think we, you know, some people forget, you know, this is a guy, as mentioned, he's entering, you know, he's still in his early 20s. You know, players don't peak at 23 typically, or 22, or you kind of hope they don't. You know, the power is generational, right? In terms of just raw power. You know, I mean, I know that this isn't a number, but like, there are only certain guys who can stand like home runs, where it's like a line drive that's like 10 feet off the ground and somehow gets out. And Vlad can do that. And it's quite entertaining to watch. But ultimately, you know, I'm not too phased by this year. I think that next year is going to be, even if it's not 160, I think 145, 150, you know, I think somewhere in that range. But he can't contribute on the field the way the other two guys can. So that's kind of where, like, I would, last year, coming into last year, I've been like, you're crazy for not having him won. This year, I'm more like, take a step back, you know, Freeman and Goldschmidt can provide in ways that Vlad can't, so I can see the argument against it there.
Yeah, but we're also talking about with Guerrero, a guy who I, you know, he could put up 200 and I wouldn't be that surprised.
I thought he was, I think if you ask everyone coming into 2022, okay, someone put up a 200 WRC plus and hit 60 home runs, I think Vlad's name might have come up before Judge's, and I don't think that's a slight to Judge. I think coming into 2022, with the information we had, coming off the year he just had, at the, you know, entering the age, it would have been, oh, maybe it was Soto, maybe it was Vlad. You know what I mean? Like, it would have been,
well, those two. I would, if that's where the 60 home runs thing comes in, because
oh, 60 home runs, it would have gone Vlad. Yeah.
If you're talking about that, like, 200 WRC plus, Soto had a 200 WRC plus.
Yeah.
Obviously, that was in a short season. And I'm like, that's the number one guy who I think next year Soto will lead the league in WRC plus.
Oh yeah. I mean, he's ridiculous. But the home run thing, Vlad. Yeah.
The home run thing, like, Vlad will lead the league in homers before Soto will. Soto will never lead the league in homers. It's just not the way he plays. He'll lead the league in walks, lead the league in on base percentage. He'll lead the league in, you know, war, maybe, offensive value, definitely WRC plus, whatever. He will not lead the league in home runs. It's just not the way he plays. Moving on at number two. And by the way, in our vote points, we give, I think we've gone over this before, but we give, you know, if you put a guy at number one, he gets 10 points. If you put him at number two, he gets 9, etc. These two, three guys, we have Freeman and Goldschmidt are 28 and 27. And then Guerrero's at 26, coming at number two, like I just said. Paul Goldschmidt, who won the MVP last year, he got 9 points from each of us. Every single one of us had him at number two on our list. And every single one of us had him at number two on our list. And I think Goldschmidt is, you know, like, he won MVP. What can you say about that?
Yeah. You know, he's put up a 177 WRC plus. Like, I mean, and last year, I know he didn't get off to the best start in 2021. They just, like, completely turned it on. It was like the best hitter in baseball. I mean, for I know 2020 is not a full season. I get it, but since 2020, he has a 156 WRC plus, which is just kind of it's insane, right? He's a remarkable defensive player. He's still a really good base runner. I know last year OAA didn't like him as much defensively, but DRS still liked him. I'm still gonna go with he's a good defender. Until all three of the stats have this marriage of he's not a good defender.
Yeah, especially because of the reputation he's built for himself and like the track record. And especially with defense, I think track record on defense matters more than
especially anything. At first base.
Yeah, because like it's so tough to judge a first baseman's defense, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
And so I mean, like, you know, it's what do you trust? What do you not trust? I think I would trust that Goldschmidt is a good defender and will continue to be a good defender.
Yeah, for sure. And I don't have any quarrels with it. I mean, I have no quarrels with, like, Goldschmidt. I could say, like, okay, maybe he's the best first baseman in baseball. Like, the gap between him and Freeman is they're like the same player almost. Like, Freeman's kind of just like the left-handed Goldschmidt in most, like, when we're kind of stepping back and thinking about it. Both are ridiculous hitters, both are good defenders, both are similar in age. I think Goldschmidt is 35.
I think he's a couple years older.
Yeah, Goldschmidt's 35, Freeman's 33. They're legit, they're exactly 2 years apart, almost two years and a couple days, here or there, because it's September 10th for Goldschmidt, September 12th.
Yeah, I don't care what their birthdays are,
but we're not talking about a 40-year-old and like a 25-year-old. We're talking about two guys kind of in the same stages of their career. Pick whoever you like more. You know what I mean? At that point, it's like, hell, if you like the color red more, just pick Goldschmidt. It's really that razor thin, in my opinion.
Oh, definitely agree with you there. I think between 1 and 2 was probably, I mean, 1, 2, and 3, like I said, and on this list are completely interchangeable. If you put Vlad at 1, if you put Goldschmidt at 1, you put Freeman at 1, I don't care. Like, these are the three best. You could tie them all for 1, for all I care. They're that good on offense, really. You look at Goldschmidt, MVP last year. Did he deserve it? I don't know. I would have given it to Machado, but there's, you know, like, it's not egregious, right, that he won it. And I don't even think it's bad. I don't think it's or anything like that. Goldschmidt is a guy who's going to give you 30 homers. He's done it, 5 years in a row. He's going to give you a 300 average. He's done that 2 out of the last 3 years. He's going to slug 500. He's done that, 7 times in his career. He's going to give you a 150 WRC plus. He's done that every year. Seamer's on a little low on him at 140. I think part of that is his age. I don't fully believe that he's going to drop off that much. But, you know, it's tough to argue with him. He's a future Hall of Famer, and he is, for us, the number 2 first baseman in baseball, leaving number 1 as Freddie Freeman. Obviously, you know, you can't argue with it, right? Freddie Freeman is a guy who has won an MVP. He's finished top 3, I think, a couple other times. He had another 7-win season last year, and I think he kind of went under the radar a little bit. He was never really getting that, you know, MVP conversation that Goldschmidt, Arenado, and Machado were having, even though Freeman was right up there with them. 160 WRC plus last year. He actually underperformed his xWOBA again, which he's done now, 5 years in a row? Yeah, 5 years in a row. It's actually kind of unreal that he's done it 5 years in a row. 10 points 5 years in a row, actually. 10 points in 2018, 19, 20, 40 points in 2021, and then another 10 this year. He adapted so easily to LA. It wasn't, you know, any type of a lot of the times, like we say, when you get a superstar changing teams, you'll see like one down year. We saw it with Lindor. We saw it with Machado. But we didn't see it with Freeman, right? And here we are, we're looking at him. He 12% walk rate, 14% strikeout rate, you know, 330 batting average, 511 slugging percentage, 160 WRC plus. That's what he is. He's an elite hitter, and it's really tough to argue with.
Yeah, I mean, when it, like, obviously, you know, this is a player who's going to waltz into the Hall of Fame the same way Goldschmidt will. When is the last time Freddie Freeman hasn't been not just a good player, like an amazing player? Like, I as long as I've remembered baseball, Paul Goldschmidt as well, but Freddie Freeman's never had a WRC plus below 132 since 2013. We're in year 10 now of that stretch. If he puts up a 130 WRC plus, we'll have 10 years of a 130 or better WRC plus. Last year, he kind of, you know, didn't have the same power numbers as usual, but that's fine because he decided to have more line drives. And, you know, he cut down his whiff rate, he's cut out his strikeout rate. He hit for a higher average. His OBP was ridiculous. Like, Man, he's a rare guy who can go 300, 400, 500 any given year. Again, he remains steady as a rock defensively. He's a very underrated base runner because, you know, at least according to BSR, he stole 13 bases last year in 16 attempts. And he doesn't really hit his double plays the frequency you expect a lumbering first baseman to.
He's also not a lumbering first baseman.
Yeah, you would expect, that's what you would expect. You know, you think, okay, close your eyes. He's 33. He's going to be 34 next September. Open your eyes. Freddie Freeman's still a great defender and still a great base runner. I don't think, again, as you mentioned, we've kind of hammered this point with all three of these first basemen. As long as these three are in your top three, all three of them, of course, you're fine. If they're not, if one of these guys are not in your top three, your list is wrong. That's how I think I view this. You know what I mean? I think Alonso's the clear, like, bridge between, you know, the
between the elite and the good. Yeah, like, right? And I think there's three elite first basemen, there's one great first baseman, and then there's a bunch of good first basemen. And I think that bridges Alonso, and I'd almost put Olsen in that great tier with him. Like, he's like right there.
The funniest thing
is, I would put those two in a tier above the rest, but I really think if you tiered these guys, it's Freeman, Goldschmidt, Guerrero, and then the next tier would be Alonso and Olsen, and then after that, you're looking at 6 through 10 of, you know, or not just 6 through 10, probably 6 through 17 or something of just a bunch of very good first basemen who all have an argument to be top 10. You know, the Christian Walkers and the Josh Bell and Rhys Hoskins, like, you know, all the 125 WRC plus hitters, right? They're all first basemen. That's what they do. They hit the ball.
Yeah. And Walker's kind of stands out because he's, again, like an elite defender. It's kind of,
but he's also not quite as good of a hitter, which is also what I put him on this list for, is his defense. The one guy that I didn't have on here that all of you had on here was Rizzo, actually, surprisingly enough. But you know, it's not really a big difference, I don't think, between Rizzo and Walker, or between Walker and Abreu, or even Walker and Lau, who we haven't Low. Lau. I don't know. Low.
I don't think the guy.
I'm not asking you for pronunciation.
Yeah, don't. I'm the last guy.
At number seven, right? But you look down this list, and there's just so many good first basemen in the league right now. It's probably the deepest position in baseball. Maybe shortstop. Yeah.
I mean, shortstop. I mean, we're going to get to shortstop, but shortstop definitely is.
Shortstop's unbelievable.
Shortstop. I mean, it feels like every good prospect is a shortstop.
I think there are 16 top 10 first basemen, top 10 shortstops in the league.
Yeah, it's kind of that position is going to definitely be a ton of fun, and we're going to make sure we have Jack on for that episode because I think you guys would love to have Jack explain our top 10 as well. But first base, I think I 100% agree. And kind of my final thoughts on the position, ultimately, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, you mentioned Rizzo was the one guy you didn't have on your list. Like, Rizzo's probably the guy where it's like, Rizzo, Abreu are both, like, I could totally see them, like, just going out and having really good offensive years, but I can also totally see something falling apart, something going just wrong. Defense or the offense just isn't enough to carry with the rest of the big rest of the guys. You know, Walker's someone I feel like if I redid this list, I would have given a stronger consideration to. I think he would have been 11 on this. Hoskins is another one where it's like, I want to give Rhys Hoskins love. I think sometimes he gets lost in the shuffle, but he's a really good hitter. You know, Josh Bell, I wonder how he'll do in Cleveland, kind of, you know, with I think the best organization he's played with so far in terms of just like player development. Maybe that helps him a little bit. Those guys kind of love having their low strikeout, high walk, you know, guys in their lineup. So maybe Josh Bell thrives there. But it's kind of my final thoughts on the position. Just very loaded outside of that, around that 10 to 15 range.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you look at just down the list, right? There were, let's do WRC plus. There were 15 guys at the position with a 120 or higher WRC plus last year. Arias is one of them. He's not playing first base this year, obviously. Joey Meneses is another one. I don't know if I exactly trust him to keep that up, but, you know, we're looking at, you know, 15 first basemen who can make an argument that are all top 10. And so,
and there are young guys like Casas can come. Like, Casas was pretty good, so you can come around, and if he's able to keep that over a full season, we're going to be talking about him next year. You know what I mean? So it's not like we're missing.
Yeah. Or a guy like Jose Miranda.
Yeah. Where he'll get a bigger role at first base.
Probably a DH. I don't know.
He can hit, you know, and you just, it's a matter of
Miranda's one of those guys that it doesn't really matter where you're going to find him a spot.
Cause he hits. Or even like, you know, Mountcastle can always kind of have one of those big years where he just goes at it, you know, goes on a home run spree. You know, as you mentioned, Arias moving off the position. If Arias didn't get traded, we'd be talking about, I think he would have moved up I think he would have been here over Rizzo for me at least. So, You know, there are guys, man. It's just position just loaded. You know, like that's where you kind of throw all the guys that like you want to have in your lineup. You have your DH spot covered, but they can mash. So it's always a fun position. But that yeah.
Yeah, that wraps it up for us. Thank you guys for listening, and we will see you in episode 79.